the worst one, and this can happen if you're an alcoholic as well, I found out, but for me, it's the weed head. The secret racist guy. Have you come across that guy yet? Holy shit, that just happened to me last week. I was floored. I've known this guy my entire life. I thought everything was cool until he got high, and I was like, oh, I don't think we can be friends anymore. We got high, I decided at that time that I should go to the bank to cash a $14 check because comedy's going so well for me that I have $14 checks, ladies and gentlemen. Which, by the way, if you have a check that is worth less than the amount of years you are on this earth, don't go to the bank to deposit it. Trust me on that. Free tip. Merry Christmas. Because they will fuck with you the entire time you're dead. You get up to the front, you're like, ooh, heavy hitter coming up. Slide that little stupid check in there. They're like, ooh, what are we going to do with this, sir? Checking and savings or what? What are we doing? Then I get embarrassed. I'm like, oh, let's just cash it out. I'd like to leave. And they're like, well, for a check this size, we're going to have to get the manager involved. Fucking keep it. But I bank at an Asian bank. I bank at an Asian bank, and you know it's an Asian bank because all of the cars in the parking lot are dented, but... but we're high as shit, we're in the bank, and everybody's Asian except for me and my friend, and he turns to me and then says the most racist thing I've ever been a part of, and he goes, don't you wish these Chinese people would go back to Japan where they belong? No more weed for you. That fucking racist, that's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life, okay? The worst thing, because Chinese people are not from Japan, FYI, they're not. They're from Milpitas, everybody knows that. San Jose, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the comedy back. My name is Sam Marcus. Keep it going for Jeremy Curry.
All right, welcome back to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. That clip you just heard was of me. How unselfish of myself to play myself on my own show. But you know what? I was funny. You laughed, admit it. And quite frankly, I didn't get permission from any other comedian this week to use their clip, so you get to hear me. That was actually at the Improv in San Jose for their fifth annual Holiday Comedy Bash, which just happened right before Christmas. It was close to 400 people. I think there was about 350, 360 people in attendance. I had some good friends in town. One of my friends is joining me right now. You guys know him. He is the Hollywood Insider. He's been on the show many times. Mr. Matt Somerville, say hello.
I was there. I was there when you said that thing about the words.
And you laughed. You chuckled. You had a great time. How great was I on a scale of 9 to 10?
Oh, 9.9 for sure. Yeah, it was definitely erring on the side of 10. Really, you know, I make a rule of only seeing your show once a year because that's all I can take.
Like most audiences, sure.
Right. And huge difference between the other night. What was it? The
23rd of December.
Yeah. Huge difference between then and the previous year when I saw you at Tommy T's with the same group of guys who all as well improved, it seemed.
Well, I think the year we saw me, the year before was the day after Christmas, actually, at Tommy T's Comedy Bash. So, yeah, right around a year. And I do tend to do comedy with the same group of folks. We have our own little group, not a comedy troupe. I don't think that's appropriate because we don't really do skits or anything on stage, but... the great Kabir Singh, as my audience knows, Jeremy Curry, who got me started in this, Abel Jaramillo, who's actually been out for a while, he's jumping back into it, I think, on January 2nd, so he's going to be jumping back in, and then a couple other folks that kind of come in and out of our little group.
But Sammy, yeah. Sammy was great, and
Sammy Obaid, yep, the great Sammy Obaid, who is actually going to be a guest on this show before too long. He confirmed again. That night, actually. So I'm looking forward to talking to that guy because he's actually got a really interesting story. He's in the Guinness Book of World Records, which I don't know a lot of people know, but he holds the record for the most consecutive nights of doing comedy in a row. So 1,001 days straight.
Shut up.
Yeah, no breaks for anything. Not for birthdays, not for vacations, not for holidays. 1,001 days straight.
That's insane.
It's very much insane. I'm not a mathematician, but I believe that's 10 years straight.
That's incorrect. But,
okay, it's close, though.
No.
Oh.
Nope. But that is I mean, a year long would be enough, and then that's far more than that. So that's pretty incredible. Was it the same venue?
No. He basically he traveled. He went all over. I don't know every single place he went, but he booked himself every single night at dive bars, arenas, comedy shows, restaurants, anywhere where he can have a paid gig. And he had to prove that he was working every single night in order to be verified by the Guinness Book of World Records. So,
and how did he do that?
I don't know. That's actually what I'm going to – I think I'm going to talk to him about when he when he's on the show. And maybe we'll talk to him. Maybe we'll have you on, and we'll kind of figure all that whole thing out. But
another great set from the other night was Frankie.
Frankie Marcos, the young man, 25. I did not discover Frankie, but I did turn certain people like Kabir Singh onto Frankie and said, you got to give this kid a chance. Because when he started, he was 22 years old.
Wow.
And he's been on this show before. He's got his own Go Frank Yourself movement. He sells a lot of merchandise, a lot of hoodies. I actually have one of his hoodies, shirts, T-shirts, bandanas, all with his Go Frank Yourself logo on it. So he's got a nice little, you know, burgeoning enterprise going with his whole name and brand and everything. So yeah, he does well.
I feel like there's probably a lot of people out there who would buy his merchandise, not because they know him or know of him or his comedy, but just because of the play on words. You know, it's like the Sky Mall audience.
Every guy who's named Frank should get a shirt that says Go Frank Yourself on it. So he's got a built-in audience for merchandise just right there. But no, he does. He does a really good job. He hustles a lot in terms of comedy. He's another guy kind of built from the Sammy Obade mode where he's a good writer and he's going to run around and just get better and better and better. So no, it was a great night. And I enjoy doing comedy a lot, especially on nights like that where you've got, like I said, 350 people and they're laughing, they're enjoying everything that you're saying up there. And I even listen to the playback, which I never do. I always record myself, either audio, visual, or both. And I very rarely look at it because it's kind of embarrassing. It's weird. It's like a weird thing to have to do. But I actually watched it the other night, and I was like, okay, I'm happy with this. It actually held up even on, you know, I watched it four times straight, so, and it worked every single time.
That's fine. You dwell on that kind of thing. I understand.
You handed me a beer here, sir. I'm drinking Hopsicle Imperial Ale by Moylan's. It says it's triple hoppy. I'm assuming it's some sort of, well, it's an Imperial Ale, so 9.2% alcohol. Jesus Christ, dude, you're trying to kill me.
Yeah. I specifically gave that one to you so I could function later.
Yeah, well, you're drinking a big old beer over there yourself. What are you drinking?
I am tossing back a big bottle of Mission Dark Seas. It is, what did you say yours was? I gave you the wrong one. Fuck.
This is Moylan's Hopsicle Imperial Ale.
No, the percentage, though. What?
9.2%.
I have poisoned myself with the 9.8%.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
See, now who doesn't know math?
Backfired plan.
That's a backfired plan that works in your favor, though. It's like, oh, no, I've given myself a delicious treat that's going to make me feel fuzzy later.
It is delicious, and it will make me feel better than I feel right now.
And that's Mission Brewery? That's out of San Diego, right?
I'm going to say yeah, and sound like I mean it. It's the Russian Imperial Stout. And it is fucking tasty. I'll tell you what, man.
Are you big into stouts? Do you like stouts?
It's starting to be my thing.
It's your thing. Stouts are kind of becoming the new IPA. So India Pale Ales have been popular in terms of the craft beer world for probably at least, I'm going to say 6, 7, 8 years at this point, where it's like at its apex. Right. And in San Diego, in fact, that city dubs themselves the IPA capital of the world because they have so many breweries there that are brewing so many different types of IPAs, double IPAs, triple IPAs. They've kind of laid their claim, even though the best double and triple IPA that's pretty much recognized by everybody is up here in Northern California. But that's
which
the
is
point.
Which
that would
is?
Be the Russian River Pliny the Elder, which is a double
Pliny,
IPA.
Yeah.
And then Pliny the Younger, yes. Which comes out in February. Which reminds me, maybe I'll try to take this podcast up there when that release happens. That's a triple IPA. And then their regular IPA, Blind Pig IPA, is considered one of the best IPAs on the planet just as a standalone IPA. Tastes fantastic.
Totally off topic, but not entirely. Boston, when I was in Boston, they had a beer called Pork Slap.
Pork Slap.
And it had two pigs high-fiving each other.
Okay.
And that's the end of the story.
So do you buy your beer kind of like how I buy books, like just based on the title
and
the cover?
What's the cool fucking picture on the bottle? I used to be like that. Honestly, I did. I won't lie. But now it's definitely more about the refined taste that I have, which sounds pretentious as all shit.
Yes.
But it's that it's that brew stuff, man. Those microbrews, they make some tasty shit. I think my favorite microbrew to date is Rogue. They've spoiled me on beer, man.
Rogue's
great. I can't go back.
Yeah, Rogue's great. And then the thing about, but like going back to the stouts, like I at my family's Christmas, everyone was fucking hammered this year.
Really?
My grandmother, who's 91 years old, was taking vodka-laced Jello shots.
Damn.
And I don't think I've seen my grandmother drink anything other than a glass of wine since, and that was like in the 90s, ever. I've never seen her take a drop of hard alcohol, and she was pounding Jello shots with the best of them. My aunt, who never really drinks outside of maybe a glass of wine, she was just popping up bottles of Chardonnay left and right. My uncle was he was just sitting in the, I took pictures of this, I'll see if I can post them online, but he was just in the kitchen and he was just staring at all the alcohol selections, and he finally goes, I've never had Fireball before. And he just takes Fireball, and I think he's going to mix it with something. He just undoes the cap and takes a swig right from the bottle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what kind of frat house? The dude's 69 years
old.
Well,
you do that with Fireball. You could be dead, and you could do that with Fireball.
But he's close to 70 years old, and he's drinking straight from the, you know, the teat.
I do hope those pictures exist. What was it about Christmas 2015 that had everybody...
I don't know. I mean, usually I have a cousin, Gabriel, and myself, and we drink. And then my cousin Brian will bring like a cooler. He's like, my cousin Gabriel and I will get like a growler or something and share it and kind of be low key a little bit about it. And his wife, Adrian. And then my cousin Brian will always show up with an igloo trailer of beer and just sit on the couch and drink and yell at everybody. But for the most part, other than that, there's a little bit of wine drinking. There's not a lot of drinking. This year, there was everyone was drinking. It was, like I said, my 91-year-old grandmother was drinking.
Fantastic.
I have no idea why. I think people were just having a great time.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was
That would be the catalyst for me. I think if in a family situation, if the grandma starts drinking, everybody else should be fucking drinking.
I was passing things to my 2-year-old daughter. I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah.
91,
no.
Two.
Grandma has wisdom, and
you're
she says
diapers,
it's okay.
So let's do this.
Yep.
Yep.
2 years old, do it.
Yeah. It was good. But it was good. For me, it was good. I've had a good week after kind of a shitty month, to be honest with you, because the month started off. Two things have happened in my life here in the month of December, and we're recording this right before the new year. One was I had to order a pizza. I didn't have to order a pizza, but I wanted to order a pizza.
Nobody ever has to order pizza.
Yeah, but I mean, we've all done it because pizza.
You rationalize and you make up excuses.
Right.
Pizza, yeah.
So I didn't want to, like, the psychosis that I have is that I'm like, okay, I can't order Mountain Mike's because I always order Mountain Mike's, and I think I ordered Mountain Mike's like 3 days before the story I'm about to tell had happened. So I can't have two Mountain Mike's like tickets in the same week. They're going to judge me.
Right.
So I decide, screw it.
Reasonable.
I'm going to go cheap. I'm going to go with Pizza Hut.
Mm.
Okay, so Pizza Hut pizza, if you've never had it, is basically it's bread and then human shit and then cheese on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's cheaper than everything else, which, you know, but again, you're eating human shit with melted cheese on top of it.
The basic ingredients of commercial pizza these
right.
days.
So I decide to go online because I don't want to talk to people. I want something other than my standard pepperoni pizza.
Mm-hmm.
So I go online and I look, and there's like this amazing looking meat lovers, whatever, orgasmatron pizza that I have never seen before. There was like, I think there was like maple duck on there and kangaroo meat.
Oh,
and I was
man.
Just like, I want that.
I've never
had that. Pizza Hut, you're coming correct. Thank you very much. So I call up the pizza place and I say, can I have your meat lovers deluxe pizza that's on your website? And they said no.
They said no.
They said no.
Why?
That's a good question. That's the question I asked them. I said, why can I not have the pizza that you're advertising? And they said, oh, you can only get that on the internet.
Oh, but I was
now,
on
I
the
want
internet.
You to think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have to. Pizza Hut does not exist on the internet in terms of manufacturing pizza.
Mm-hmm.
They have a physical location where they actually have ingredients.
Distribution center.
And they make a pizza, and then they deliver it to you.
Yeah, the internet doesn't make pizzas.
Right, not yet.
Well,
but
yeah.
That's the part that hurt my head the most. I'm like, are you telling me I can only order this online? And she says, yes. And I said, so who's going to make the fucking pizza when I order it online? They're going to send it to the closest Pizza Hut near my house, which is you guys. So
yeah.
I cut out the internet, and I went right to you guys.
Yeah.
Why can I not get a pizza? And she said, sir, it's just for the internet. We cannot help you.
What the fuck?
I, being the nice, patient guy, that was lovely. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
He is drinking, if you could not tell, predictably drunk. Smart people talking about stupid things.
I'm also eating internet pizza.
Internet pizza, apparently. Maybe it exists in L.A. where you live, friend, but not up here in normal Northern California. It just doesn't happen. So I yelled at the lady a lot.
Yeah.
Still ordered my pepperoni pizza because I was already on the phone with them. Why not?
No exotic foreign meat.
No, no
pizza?
Kangaroo meat, no hippo meat, no nothing.
Letdown.
Just regular old pig.
Okay, so then what?
So then I get my pizza, and it's not very good. Okay,
well, it's Pizza
Hut shit pie.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, whatever, but it cost me $12. I guess it's fine. That was on a Monday.
Okay.
The very next day, I'm driving down the road, and I realize I have to stop at, like, a hardware store to pick up some stuff. I go inside to pick up some stuff. I slap down my credit card, knowing that there's a ton of money in there, and my card gets declined.
Mm.
I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on here. But I get out to my car, and lo and behold, I have a message, a voicemail on my... Because I had another credit card. I paid for the stuff that I needed, and I got out of there.
From your bank.
Yeah, and I got a voicemail message from my bank, and my bank says, you know, call us immediately. I call in, and they say, we've noticed some fraud charges on your account.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, okay, well, let's go through this. So the first one was for like $8. And I'm like, I don't think I spent $8 at a casino somewhere in Central California.
Let's
but,
stop you right there.
Yeah.
Who spends $8 only at a casino?
I will get to that and why that happens.
Okay.
But I go, no, I didn't spend $8 at a casino in Central California. Then the very next charge is $975 for a lawyer in France.
He wanted to test it with $8 first.
That's exactly right.
And he got in the hole so bad that he had to fucking hire a French lawyer.
That's what fraud people do when they get a hold of your card is they will try it with a very small amount first. And
right.
if it goes through and takes, then they go buck. Fucking wild with your shit.
Got it.
So I said, well, obviously I was not in France today spending money on a lawyer, which if you're a criminal, by the way, stealing somebody's identity and using it to buy legal fees and legal advice is probably really, really good. Like it's like a responsible criminal, also very boring.
I have so many questions.
We're going to get to those questions.
All right.
The very next charge after that is like $3,000 at like an amusement park in Germany.
What?
Yeah. So I don't know how my card was taken. But they started reading off all this stuff, and I said, none of those are mine. I have not used any of these. And then they said, what's the last charge that you can remember having? And I said, I spent about $14 at Pizza Hut the night before for their shit pizza.
Right, right.
And then it dawned on me, not only did I get a bullshit pizza, not the one that I wanted, but because I was yelling at this lady online so much, or on the phone about her non-online presence... I'm pretty sure she stole my identity.
She put your credit card on the internet.
And put my credit card on the internet or gave it to a friend who went nuts with lawyers and German Disneyland.
Well, because
Disneyland
it was
rights.
Either that or it was fucking James Bond who stole your card.
Yeah.
Because he's making really impressive ground here with having stolen it in San Jose, California, then having traveled to France and then Germany.
Well, first to Central California. To a casino.
Oh, that's right, 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 right.
And then overseas. So, yeah, it was not a fun time. So they shut down. The bank shut down. You know, I got my money back, but they shut down all of my accounts right before Christmas.
Yeah.
So I was trying, I was like a teenager, dude. Like, I had to pay for stuff with cash, like very limited budget.
You made everyone's presents with construction paper.
The construction paper was their present.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just a stack of construction.
Yeah, here, use your creativity bone and make
it.
Something.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not pleasant, but I got everything kind of turned back on, that you know, new accounts, all my automatic the good news about it is my automatic payment stuff. So they stole my ATM card that had all my automatic payment, right? So like for my Netflix, you know, every bill that I have out there, PG&E, all this stuff. But what I didn't realize, apparently I was really bad with money in my late 20s because I just signed up for a bunch of stuff that I had no idea was just nickel and diming me every single month. So I was getting these nasty emails from like, you know, Credit Karma and all these other places where apparently I was just every 20 bucks every month was going for somebody to check my credit. And so thank you, criminals, for stealing my shit because I actually am probably going to make more money off of this now that I've realized how many things out there I was actually paying for that I'm not using in terms of goods and services. So
you don't seem to recall why you were irresponsible with your money in the 20s. What do you think happened? Any ideas?
My guess is that the name of this show called Predictably Drunk is really born out of my late 20s, and I've told the story of how this show became Predictably Drunk before. But it was probably alcohol infused.
See, folks, I knew the answer to that question, but sometimes it's more entertaining if you fish for it.
You have to admit before you can grow, and there you go. I should be growing, hopefully not laterally, anytime soon.
As he takes another drink of alcohol.
Oh, it's so good. Beer is so good.
So you were able to take care of the holidays and present buying and all that.
Holidays, present buying, all that. I probably overcompensated because I got my card and all my information back like 3 days before Christmas. So I ended up going buck wild, just buying a whole bunch of shit that I probably didn't even need to buy for people. But I felt like guilty because I hadn't done it yet. So I buy, oh, I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. Yeah. Spent way more money than I probably needed to. But whatever, it's fine.
It happens. It happens.
Yeah, I can always make it back when I go back on tour next year because I'm going to be in Tucson, Arizona in February for comedy. I'm going to be in Reno, Nevada in March for comedy. I'm going to be at the JJ's Blues Sports Bar and Lounge in San Jose, California, January 2nd. And I'll be at the Huddle, which is the shit dive bar, January 17th. I'll be opening for Larry Bubbles Brown, who's an icon in Bay Area comedy. So I'm looking forward to that, too. So now, I'll make my money back.
You said shit twice there.
Yeah.
What would constitute a double shit?
Well, not to shit on a bar that's allowing me to do comedy and paying me to do so, but I've actually been to this bar before, and it's a very, very just, you walk in, and it looks like a place that
it looks like hepatitis.
It looks awful.
Yeah,
it looks like the last place you ever want to be. And that's the only thing I can really, you know.
So you should bring what, shoulder pads to the set?
I would bring a napkin if you're going to come. If you're going to sit on any of the chairs, just put something down, like an ass gasket, like you would see at a toilet stop.
Small concealable gun,
something
you could put up your sleeve, like poker players in the West.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just something like that, like a little derringer or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
That's probably going to edit out because I don't think anybody's going to understand that. But
here's something I'm learning about doing these podcasts with Sam. He'll say, I'm going to edit this out, and I'll think, no one's ever going to hear that. And then he'll say, well, the podcast is up, and I'll go listen to it, and there it is, him saying, I'm going to edit that out, and just not doing it.
It's a joke. It's an on-running joke because I have control. As a podcast, ladies and gentlemen, these are not live typically, so you have the ability to go in and edit these things after the fact. So the fact that you say, I'm going to edit that out later and then never do, I find to be hilarious. Although I do edit stuff out all the time.
That's true. You should. You should.
Yeah. I mean, every now and then Matt just curses and starts dropping N-bombs.
Really racist. Yeah, it gets really racist.
Yeah,
so any editing is entirely about my problems.
Yep, and then I would just cut it all out because not because it's racist, but because it's boring.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
We just
it's not hip anymore to be racist, guys.
No, it's really not.
It's not the end thing to do.
What else is going on, my friend? You've been on the podcast a lot here recently.
Well, I want to know all about this shit that I keep hearing about the roast battling.
Roast battles. Yeah. So that's thank you for bringing that up because this is actually something I was going to ask you about it because you live in LA.
I do.
And roast battles, for people that aren't familiar, you're probably familiar with a traditional comedy roast where you have a select figure.
Yes.
And then a bunch of comedians and friends get up and they tell horrible, horrible jokes and stories about that person under the guise of loving them.
Yeah. Friars Club, right?
Friars Club was traditional for it. Comedy Central has broken off. And they're probably the most popular now. They do their own version of the roast, the Comedy Central roast of so-and-so.
Now, do you know the difference between Friars Club and what Comedy Central does?
Yes.
Is Friars Club even doing it anymore?
No. Well, Friars Club does it. Friars Club was pretty much considered in the traditional roast format of being the innovators of doing a roast. Like the Rat Pack used to be part of the Friars Club, and that's what they would do. And it was a private event. It was basically a private party, and you would pick somebody who was going to be your feature. Essentially, it's the same format that the Comedy Central roast does. So when Comedy Central started doing those roasts, originally they were the Friars Club roast of so-and-so.
I see.
The problem is Friars Club is a very uppity, old, stuffy organization that doesn't really allow a lot of new people to come in.
Right. It would be like the Dukes brothers from Trading Places. They would be a part of the Friars Club.
Yeah. So if you want to do a roast about somebody outside of the Friars Club, the Friars Club's not going to allow you to do it. So
I see.
Comedy Central did a roast of Justin Bieber. Bieber, for example. Well, Justin Bieber, there's no way in hell he's ever getting in the Friars Club.
But nobody in the Friars Club even knows who that woman is.
Exactly. But you want to do – there's a good roast joke right there. But you want to do a roast of Justin Bieber because you know there's an audience salivating to hear an hour worth of Justin Bieber is gay jokes.
Right.
So Comedy Central got smart going. We have our own brand. We have our own channel. We can control everything. And Comedy Central is actually really good for comedians. It's a corporate thing, but it's a really good corporate thing for comedians. So they just busted out from the Friars Group, Friars Club, and said, we'll just do our own roast. So that's henceforth why they're the Comedy Central.
Okay. And then third tier would be the – doesn't ESPN do their own roasts?
Everybody does roasts, and because roasts is very they're very popular, right? Because it's like kind of the last bastion of political correctness that you can get away from.
Sure.
Even comedy these days, you go to an underground club, and there's certain things you can't do. I go to the Pioneer Underground. Okay, it's an underground club in Reno. Like the whole name itself brings up images of you can say whatever you want on stage, and I will be talked to by the guy. I love the guy, but he's like, please don't swear so much.
So it's literally subground.
It is. Okay. Most underground clubs are. Subground that way, yeah.
Okay.
But there's not a whole lot you can say on stage, even though you think it's free form. So getting a chance to say whatever mean, disgusting, disturbing shit you need to say can usually come out in a roast. That's like the last bastion of just depravity in terms of the comedy world.
Yeah.
So ESPN, everybody does a version of it. We do it on local levels here. In fact, I'm going to be doing one for Kabir Singh on December 30th. Hopefully this is out before then. But what a roast battle is – basically the same sort of thing, except instead of having one subject and about 10 comedians shitting all over that single comedian and then that guy having a rebuttal at the end of the night, what you have are two comedians that go head-to-head, usually in 2 to 3 minute formats, where they just nail off jokes about that other comedian that they're going up against.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 in a roast style. And then it goes to the other guy for his rebuttal, and then the audience or judges will then vote on who wins. So it's very much... it's the comedian version of a rap battle.
Yeah, it's Jeff Ross meets Eminem.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
that's okay. Exactly right. So it's Jeff Ross in at 8 Mile. Essentially,
there you go. It's basically a rap battle, but for less skilled but funnier people.
Yeah, and typically they do not rhyme. Sometimes they do, but those people tend to lose in the roast battles. So the reason I bring this up is this has made its way to Northern California. It's been big in the LA comedy scene for about a year or two, and I was actually going to ask you if you've come across this in your travels down in LA. Have you heard about it, or what have you seen? Because I have a feeling that within the comedy realm that this is going to be the next big genre that will be on TV. I could see Comedy Central putting together a show of kind of unknown underground comics going back and forth, and the winner of that gets to go on their big Comedy Central roast and, you know, do their chops on a celebrity or something like that. I could absolutely see this being kind of the next big thing within the comedy realm, and it's already permeated up here. There's a place called Woodham's in Santa Clara, California. Every other Monday, they do roast battles.
Really?
And that's where I was earlier this week. I saw two different roast battles with varying degrees of success, but it was a very interesting concept, and I'm wondering if you'd run into that down in L.A. Have you heard of it?
No, honestly, I haven't. Yeah. The first I've heard about it is from you, and that's why I wanted to ask about it. No, I have not. And, you know, I try to stay as plugged into the comedy world down in L.A. as much as possible.
Well, you don't really have a choice. I mean, makes you have to stay plugged in with the comedy world. So that's why I was kind of curious if you'd come across this yet. It's a very interesting thing because it's just like rap in that you can have a comic just basically challenge another comedian. And if that comedian backs down, then they're a bitch, they're a pussy, all those things that you would see in a rap battle. So probably less cool than rappers.
Well, let me ask you a question. I don't think it's safe to assume that anyone who raps can be in a rap battle.
Correct.
Much in the same way that anyone who does comedy can be part of a comedy rap battle.
Absolutely.
A roast rap battle. A roast battle. I'll say it right for the third time.
Yeah, I like how you kept throwing rap in there.
I think that there's a certain difference there. There's a certain difference we've had because there's different pacings with both. There's different pacings specifically with comedy, but to be quick and to be spontaneous with your comedy, and you know, like how to deal with a heckler.
Yeah,
some comedians deal fantastically with a heckler. Yep. Some don't. Some struggle.
Yeah,
you know, some are very much the kind of person who does best by sitting down, writing a routine, reciting that routine verbatim, and then walking off the stage. That can still be funny.
Yeah.
But they're not as quick, like off the hip, to really have that quick answer or that quick new fresh thing to say.
Absolutely.
So how do you think that's going to play out with these roast battles?
Well, I think you have to be true to yourself, and you have to kind of know what you're good at and what you're not good at. And the good thing about comedians is, for the most part, whether they admit it in front of other people or not, comedians, for the just by the nature of what they do, they have to be very self-aware. You know, they have to know what they're good at, what they're bad at, what's funny, what's not funny. Now, there's some that are oblivious to it, and I was actually talking to some comics about a certain individual the other night. I'm like, unbelievable that this guy has no idea that he's just not funny, and he thinks he's like the best thing ever. And I'll tell you about who it is off the air. But yeah, it's just, you have to know. And I'll give you the perfect example. We mentioned both our names earlier, Sammy Obaid and Kabir Singh. Sammy Obaid is a much better joke writer than Kabir Singh. It's not even close. Sammy Obaid can sit down and he can write pages upon pages upon pages of jokes that are smart, funny, intellectual, make you laugh every single time. He comes out with a new set virtually every single night.
When written down, a Sammy Obaid, I call them the Kinects joke. If you, I don't know if you ever played that with that when you were a kid. Were you too old for that? Or
no, no. Okay. I mean, he basically daisy chains the jokes together.
Yeah, I mean, it's the erector set of fucking jokes. Like it's a joke, and then that is played off onto another joke, and then again and again and again and again and again. It's right. Brilliant. It probably looks like a math equation when written down.
And then you have the opposite of that. Kabir Singh's not. Kabir's a good writer. Kabir's a good joke writer, but Kabir is a much better performer, if that makes more sense. So
yes.
Kabir can actually go on stage, and like you talked about dealing with a heckler, he can sit there and talk to the audience and make it funny for 45 minutes and never get into a set. He can just do crowd work.
That's what he did last week.
Yeah.
He just spoke for 40 minutes about nothing. It was just, it wasn't even part of a routine. He just played to the crowd and people were dying.
Yeah, because he knows how to talk to people, and he's that quick that he can just come up with something and make it funny. And if you repeat it and go, oh, Kabir Singh said this, it's not funny because you don't have his mannerisms. You don't have that X factor.
Because
that
you're not Kabir Singh.
Yeah. So that is the difference, like right there, between two people that are both very funny comedians. One's a writer, one's a performer. They have their own styles. And I put them on an even playing field in terms of where they are talent wise. It's just a different type of talent. So yeah. And now for me, like, I don't do well with hecklers in that if I go after a heckler, I usually come off as a jerk.
Mm.
But what that does tell me is that when it comes to roast battles, I'm probably going to do just fine. And you also have to know that the audience, if you're going to a roast battle, is there to see a roast battle. It's just like doing comedy at a comedy club is much easier than doing comedy at a sports bar, because they're going to the comedy venue to watch comedy.
Yes.
You go to a sports bar, you might have like 15 people that are there to watch comedy, and the others are trying to watch the Golden State Warriors pound some team into oblivion, and you're just interrupting them on stage.
Right.
So it's really, you have to know your environment. You have to know what you're good at. You have to understand that, you know, maybe roast battles aren't what I'm going to do. Sammy Obaid's never going to do well in a roast battle. Why?
That's probably
true. Not who he is.
That's probably true.
But
yeah.
He's going to do much better on a stage than, you know, you, me, or anybody else for the most part. So.
Joe Rogan typically 99% of the time is not funny. But I think he might do well at a roast battle because he's always handled those hecklers very well.
Joe Rogan is an interesting comedian to me because if you listen to the audio of his set, it's very funny. Like, I get a very good visual in my head when I listen to Joe Rogan. When I have the visual of him doing the same exact set, it's not funny anymore.
That's weird.
There's a visual block with him where it's just not funny anymore. And I think it's because I consider him, like, when I'm hearing him in his head, he's moving a certain way, he's doing certain things, and then you see him actually not doing what you envision him to do. It's almost the difference between a book and a movie.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Okay.
Like, you kind of have your creative license to have him do whatever it is you think would be funny on how he's talking about something.
I understand.
Yeah, Joe also has the best podcast, the number one podcast in the world. So
no shit.
Oh, he gets paid more money to do the podcast than anybody else.
Really?
He's number one.
What
by
is
far.
His podcast? Maybe we
the
shouldn't
Joe Rogan
plug,
Experience.
Let's not plug his.
No, why not?
Someone others, someone else's podcast.
No, podcasting. Podcasting's the future. So you.
Okay.
You want some
Joe,
like Joe
Rogan Experience?
Yes. Very
listen,
good podcast.
Listen to that after you listen to this, but then come back.
If you're going to listen
Please
to that, just
back.
Settle down because it's like a 4-hour podcast
Holy
every single day.
Balls.
It's a long ass podcast.
Jesus. Does he talk about UFC shit or does he talk
everything.
About?
Yeah,
okay,
I mean,
everything.
He's that okay. kind of general interest got podcast it. Kind of
got
thing.
It,
but he's
got
he goes on long rants that are entertaining, and then there's, you know, things that aren't as entertaining, but that's he gets paid a lot of money to do it, so why not sit there for 4 hours and talk?
I mean, the thing that he does the most as his career, what he gets paid for the most, is talking.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a lot of sense that it would be, well, 4 hours still. Jesus fucking Christ. What are we at now? 30 minutes?
We're at 30, and I'm sick of talking.
Yeah, we got to stop. I've had enough.
Yeah. Well, shit, this is the this is actually exciting for me because this was actually the very last podcast of the first year of this podcast, Predictably Drunk. I assumed I would probably stop doing this after about 5 episodes.
Stop, really?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't really commit to things too long.
You're good at this, though.
Well, I appreciate that. So we're getting up on to episode 40. The show has been very popular the last 3 months. The viewership, or listenership, I guess, has gone through the roof, and I think it has partially to do with a lot of comedy gigs. And
it has entirely to do with me.
Well, you have been on the show quite a bit, so
yeah. Yep.
Maybe we give part of that to Matt. Matt has some teeth in this.
No, this is all Sam. He's a very busy man. He has a lot of shit going on, and he still manages to squeeze this shit in. I don't know how. I don't know where Sam gets the time. I believe him to be a wizard.
I am a wizard, and
he's
I'm
a time
wizard,
wizard
who
from the
doing
future.
More podcasts in 2016. There will be a dedicated website to this. You guys have all probably been listening to this either through iTunes or sammarcoux.com and then going to the podcast link. I have purchased predictablydrunk.com. I haven't done anything with it yet. If you go to it, it just kind of maps to sammarcoux.com. But the reason I did that is there's going to be some cool things coming up about the podcast in general for 2016, so it kind of needs its own site. But nothing else as much is going to change. I think Matt's going to join us a little bit more. I mean, kind of the worst official announcement ever, but Matt has agreed to be the official co-host in 2016. Doesn't mean you're going to be on every episode, I don't
think. No, because nobody has time for that shit.
But
except fucking future time wizards.
Yeah.
Which I am not. I'll admit that. I'm not a fucking time wizard from the future.
But you
this 9.8.
Yeah, I would say that beer is
getting
there. You just wander
a little bit of effect.
Well, it is Predictably Drunk. Smart people talking about stupid things. So you are living it up already.
Yeah, happy to be here every time Sam wants me here. It's so much fun.
Yeah, you'll be the permanent co-host who's not here permanently.
Correct.
I think that's going to be on the business card.
There's no rules here.
No.
This is predictably drunk. There's no
rules. Really are. We just, as long as we're drinking and talking about stupid shit, then I guess we're fine.
That's it. We fit the bill.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you guys very much. Happy New Year. We'll see you guys in 2016. I'll have all my new tour dates up on sammarcoux.com as well as predictablydrunk.com because I haven't changed them either. But we'll see you guys soon. This is Predictably Drunk. Smart people talking about stupid things.
Bye, y'all.